I don't know if being an administrator is being something more than being a faculty member. In fact, most faculty will tell you it's being something less than a faculty member, including probably me when I was a faculty member. But I do think a part of this has been driven just by my curiosity, and I love to try new things. And so whenever anyone would say, you know, we need somebody who can serve on this committee, we need somebody who can engage in this project, I would always say yes. And that's one of my pieces of advice to folks is, you know, if it's not going to be too much of a drain, say yes. You'll always learn things. And to your point, though, sometimes you learn good things and sometimes you learn bad things. And, you know, I have learned so many aspects of higher education just by serving with people who are so far afield from the work that I've done. You know, as an English faculty member, I served on technology committees. I served on budget committees. So I really got a whole look.
Welcome to Innovating Together, a podcast produced by the University Innovation Alliance. This is a podcast for busy people in higher education who are looking for the best ideas, inspiration, and leaders that will help you improve student success. I'm your host, Bridget Burns. Each week, I partner with a journalist to have a conversation with a sitting college president, chancellor, system leader, or someone in the broader ecosystem who's really an inspiring leader. And the goal is to have a conversation to distill their perspective and their insights gathered from their leadership journey. Our hope is that this is inspiring and gives you something to look forward to each week. This episode, my co-host is Inside Higher Ed co-founder and CEO, Doug Lederman.
Today, we're joined by somebody who's very wise, Ann Kress, who's president of Northern Virginia Community College, which is in my backyard here outside Washington, D.C., and has been in community college leadership for quite a while. She was at Monroe Community College in Rochester, New York before that, and we're glad to have her locally. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you. Thank you. I had to laugh when you said someone was very wise. I have a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old. And
they don't think so.
I get that a lot.
Exactly. Get that a lot. Yeah, I've been there. Yeah, I know that feeling. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I wanted to start because when we were having a prep conversation, one thing that struck me was that your background, while you did not personally experience community college, you are extremely vocal and passionate about the value of them. And I know that, you know, any community college president, of course, cares about community colleges, but I'm curious if you can share with us, walk us back to either the moment or the experience or the perspective that kind of really infected you, or like you caught the bug of realizing that this was the place where you really wanted to make your career and to make as much change as possible.
Sure. So first of all, thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited to talk with you about so many different things. But so I'm going to take you all the way back to when I was a little girl. So when I was a little girl, my family didn't have a lot of resources. My grandparents either didn't graduate from eighth grade or didn't graduate from high school, depending on which side of the family you're looking at. My parents graduated from high school. My father entered the military directly after and used his GI benefit to get a short-term certificate in drafting from a technical institute when he returned back. And so when I was little, my family really couldn't afford any housing until my father got that drafting certificate. So it really changed the trajectory of my family's life. And my sister and I were able to go to the University of Florida because of all of the changes that my father was able to sort of move our family through. So I didn't go to a community college, but when I was between my master's and my doctorate, I decided, oh, well, I really want to take a break. And I knew I could teach at a community college with a master's degree. My master's degree was in English. It still is in English. And so I taught at the local community college, Santa Fe Community College then, Santa Fe College now in Gainesville, Florida. And I had been a TA in the English department at UF. I had been a TA for other departments teaching writing courses. And then I got into the community college classroom, and it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. The diversity of students in every way, shape, and form, the diversity of experiences that they brought to the classroom, to our discussions, to our dialogues. And I was hooked. I absolutely fell in love with community colleges. I learned more about the mission. I interacted with my fellow faculty. I really saw what the college was doing in the community where I had lived at that point for more than probably 15 years, but didn't really understand in any way, shape, or form outside of as a college student. It just opened my eyes to so much. And I made a decision that I would love to work in a community college. I would love to teach in a community college. And luckily, partway through my doctorate in early modern women's literature at the University of Florida, I got a call from the community college asking me to apply for a position. And I was honored and delighted and never looked back.
It would make so much sense for universities. I don't know if they would want to make a requirement, because you would probably end up having some people who don't want to be there teaching in community college classrooms. But to me, it would be so beneficial probably all the way around if more people, as they're getting their doctorates, taught in a community college. I wonder if there's a national core that we should be developing along those lines. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it would be really powerful. I will say, and I just want to go back to this, you know, I had lived in Gainesville at that point for a very long time, but as a university student and graduate student, you often only experience your community in one way. And you don't really get the town that's part of the town and gown relations. And that was one of the things that really changed for me when I started working at Santa Fe, is I got to know people who lived in Gainesville and the surrounding communities and the challenges they faced and the opportunities they were looking for. And it really, it's not an overstatement to say that it changed what I did with the rest of my life.
I want to tease out a little bit more about your background. When we were talking, you shared a really helpful story, because I feel like a lot of folks go through a moment when they feel like the progressing in their career requires them to be a little bit less of themselves, to be a little bit to dim their light a little, or to put on the beige of academia. In some cases, it can really backfire, but there are also cases where that's not that it actually works out. So I'm curious about if you can share about the experience, that experience, and having purple hair.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So when I was first hired at Santa Fe, after I was an adjunct, I eventually was hired as a full-time faculty member in the English department. And my department chair was a lovely woman named Barbara. And so after I got tenure in the department, she had a conversation with me about how she thought I could be a potential leader in the department and maybe even at the college. But to take you back, I mean, I did not necessarily look like this. I had very bright purple hair. I had black fingernails. This was the 90s, everyone. I, you know, wore classic 90s, you know, dresses with white socks and Doc Martens. My then boyfriend, now husband, was in a number of local bands. And so I was out at clubs a lot, and I would have club stamps on my hand and when I came in to teach. And so after sort of sharing with me the leadership potential that she saw, Barbara also said, you know, this is not always going to be helpful. And I, you know, on a certain level, you're like, but this is me. This is my identity. This is who I am. And Barbara was from the Midwest, but she was always such a wonderful mentor, because she would be very direct about things and say, this is great for you, but this is going to be a challenge. And so, you know, I thought about it, and it didn't mean that I changed my personality or the way that I approach things. But, you know, what she was trying to get me to see is that you've got to get that door open first. And, you know, so to this day, you know, I still have pictures of myself with purple hair, but I no longer have purple hair. I have a bit of gray now. There you go. But I do think, you know, I always tell people, you need to listen when folks who care about you and care about your future talk to you in honest ways. First, believe them when they say that they see something in you, because sometimes, especially as women leaders, sometimes we think, oh, well, that's nice. You don't necessarily mean that. But believe people, lean into that. But the second is also listen to the other stuff that they're telling you, that sometimes is more tough love than a lot of cheerleading, because what they're trying to do is to help you advance. And your ability to take that advice is really going to be one of the keys to your future.
I'm thinking of all kinds of advice when I'm especially speaking to younger folks in their career. And it really, it is about every decision you make either opens the door or closes the door. Mm-hmm. And you have to just, all you want is to make those decisions yourself. You want actually it to be on purpose, not happening to you. As much as you can control, there's a lot that you can control. You should put that picture with the purple hair like that. Maybe that should be your presidential portrait, right?
Yes.
You too can be yourself and move forward.
I'm curious a little bit about what led you into leadership. What sort of lots of people have different stories about sort of when they decided that pursuing something more than being a faculty member was the direction they wanted to go. And I'm curious sort of what drew you in and what would you say that you learned and were sort of drawn into leadership more by watching people do really good things and by positive examples, or potentially by things you saw that you thought, oh, I could do that. I wouldn't do it that way. I'd like to do it a different way.
Well, I think, first I'll go back and say that I don't know if being an administrator is being something more than being a faculty member. In fact, most faculty will tell you it's being something less than a faculty member, including probably me when I was a faculty member. But I do think a part of this has been driven just by my curiosity, and I love to try new things. And so whenever anyone would say, you know, we need somebody who can serve on this committee, we need somebody who can engage in this project, I would always say yes. And that's one of my pieces of advice to folks is, you know, if it's not going to be too much of a drain, say yes, you'll always learn things. And to your point, though, sometimes you learn good things and sometimes you learn bad things. And, you know, I have learned so many aspects of higher education just by serving with people who are so far afield from the work that I've done. You know, as an English faculty member, I served on technology committees, I served on budget committees. So I really got a whole look at the institution. But then there are also sometimes when I saw leaders or people who, you know, we held up as leaders behave in ways where I thought, okay, this is a lesson. And one thing was in one of the institutions I worked at, there was a reorganization and I was one of the folks who was being reorganized. And so I went into somebody's office who clearly this was just the chore of the day for this administrator and just had a bunch of names on a sheet of paper and, you know, sort of gave me the 30-second, 90-second spiel about what was going to happen to me next and literally crossed my name off a list and then said, so do you have any questions? And I'm looking at that and I remember just being so irate, you know, look, every organization goes through these changes, but there is a way to approach this. And I said to the person, this is not, we're humans here. And, you know, it is a danger when we lose sight of this. And his future at the institution was compromised, I will say later, because of the way that this was handled. But shortly after that, I was moved into a different role at the college. And one of the first things that landed in my lap was that the college was ending a contract with a community agency that it had been in place for quite some time. And as a result, you know, more than 30 people were going to lose their jobs. And, you know, in reflecting on how I felt, I could have sent somebody to handle this. I could have written a letter. I could have done anything, but I went to the office of this agency and had them call a meeting together. And I stood in front of the room and I looked everyone in the eye and I told them what was going to happen, why it was happening, and how we were positioned to help them move forward. And it's one of the worst things I've ever had to do, especially just a couple weeks after taking on a new assignment. But it made a difference. I mean, I sat in my car in the parking lot afterwards and just wept. But I had people who came up to me in that room and said, you know, I'm mad, I'm angry, this sucks, this is terrible, and other things. But they also always ended with, but it took a lot for you to come here and say this to me directly. And I just want to tell you, I appreciate it. And I thought, you know, that's the other side of leadership. I mean, sometimes we have to do things that are really challenging, and it's not what we do, but how we do that makes the difference. And that, you know, we learn all sorts of lessons by watching other people, but I do hope we learn through those experiences and we don't replicate what we ourselves were on the other end of.
I love that question. And I was thinking about it as I, like, after we talked, and I was like, I think that I think I learned a great deal from great examples, but you can't appreciate the good examples of leadership until you see the bad examples, because it puts like a boundary and it helps you appreciate just how valuable good leadership is, because you see or feel the consequence of bad leadership. I'm curious about how you lead in difficult times. What kinds of, you know, how do you think about talking to your team and your students when things are challenging, when you grow up in a society that has hard news every week, it seems? I'm curious about how do you think about your role and what, if you want to be Pollyanna, how do you show up and be present and human, but also give them a way of seeing the world that allows them to show up and do their best work despite what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's, you know, certainly the past few years have really tested us all around that. And I go back to just the old mantra that it's always communication, communication, communication. And I think you need to add authentic onto that, because, you know, the past few years, there have been so many situations in which, as a leader, as the president, I've had to communicate with the college community about things where we know this much at this moment. And I think you need to be honest with people about that. But also share that, you know, because you know this much, this is why you're doing this. So you don't just share the what, but you share the how and the why in a way that folks will understand. And then when things change, you also explain how and why around that as well. You know, to me, it's really important when you're in this sort of environment of uncertainty, and for lots of folks, a lot of trauma, it's too much. I think we can all agree that the past, you know, few years have for many of us been too much. And so it's grounding everything you do in that reminder that everyone is a person. You know, often I do Zooms on a regular basis, and I often remind the folks across the college that we only know this much about each other's lives as well. You don't know everything else that somebody might be struggling with, because folks are really good at putting on their best faces frequently. And so if you just treat people with kindness and with generosity and with that sense of grace, we can move pretty far. And if we do that for each other, and we all understand that we're in this together, we can keep moving down the road. You know, and I'm sitting here in front of a computer that overlooks our Annandale campus. And, you know, I hadn't been in this job more than 2 months before I had to make a decision at the beginning of COVID to, you know, move a college community with 6 campuses, 3,500 employees, you know, close to 80,000 students, all virtual, right, within just a few short days. And, you know, it's a community that didn't know me necessarily, and I didn't know all of them at this point. But I had to get folks all moving in the same direction and then just keep up that communication. So I think that's part of it. But then it's about mission, right? So that's the hope. It's the why we're doing what we're doing, right? And it's keeping people looking at that horizon. Why are we doing what we're doing? Because we provide access to educational opportunity and we transform lives. And we're going to keep doing that. And that's what we're focusing on, right? It's keeping people grounded in the essential mission of our work, which is a mission of hope and optimism at community colleges, right? I often say that the folks who work in community colleges see an empty glass sometimes and think of it not as half full, but as full, because that's the work we need to do. We have to believe in the students that we serve. We have to believe in their goals and hopes and aspirations, and we keep moving them forward towards those.
Oh, and I ask a twist on that question about sort of leading public institution at a time of intense political division. And, you know, we can talk about probably best if we don't talk about exactly what happened the last few days, but we've had a lot of that going on. Yeah. And I guess I'm curious sort of about how you think about what about your own views you put forward, what you focus on to avoid offending people who don't agree with you. How do you think about sort of leading at times that are really challenging along those lines?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know that different leaders have different philosophies about this. I mean, I've gone to public institutions and worked in public institutions my entire life. So, you know, part of this is, I think as a leader of a public institution, you don't have a political party. You don't have a political agenda. I always tell people I'm the Nova party. That's what my party is. And, but I do think you focus on, again, what your mission is. You educate folks. You help them understand, you know, what are the rights that they have as citizens of this great country? You help them understand how they exercise those rights. I mean, that's the power of education. You give individuals a sense of the history of the country and what it took for folks to be able to vote. You know, going all the way back to the, you know, we're about to hit 4th of July, to the founding of this country. One of the things that's been of great concern to me, you know, since I moved into leadership, was quite honestly how few of young people today vote. When you look at who votes, they're much more likely to be individuals of my age than individuals of our average student age at Nova, which is, you know, right around 21 and a half years old. We're a fairly young community college. So that's part of what I think we do. You know, if you have concerns about what's happening in the political space, you have a vote at the ballot box, and that's how you exercise it. I don't care what your political persuasion is, but if you abrogate that responsibility, if you give it up, then that's a challenge we all face. So I do think, no matter what sort of higher education institution somebody is working or leading, encouraging people to exercise the rights that they have as citizens is incredibly important. Freedom of expression, right? The right to vote, just those basic principles that guide all of us through the Constitution and the Declaration.
I appreciate that. I want to shift to a little bit around kind of advice for others and the things that you, by being in a leadership position, I'm sure folks approach you all the time and want insight, guidance, mentorship, et cetera. The first question I want to ask is around if there's a book that you often recommend around leadership, or is there one that you've most frequently recommended to people that you can share with us?
I'll be honest, I'm not super big on leadership books. I have done a few talks in the past about one of my favorite books about leadership, and it's Charlotte's Web, which I, you know, if I recommend anything to people, it's that they read more literature, because I do think there's, you know, the arts matter, humanities matter, you know, my degrees are in English. Two of my degrees are in English. I do think there's something that you gain in terms of understanding others by reading literature globally that is really powerful. But, you know, when I think back about how I was shaped, even in thinking about the world, and I think children's literature is especially important. And if you haven't picked up Charlotte's Web recently, I think it's a good read. It still makes me cry. You know, it's about how do you act on your beliefs? How do you build a team? How do you form a friendship? How do you mentor others? How do you get folks with very different beliefs and approaches to the world to work together around a shared cause? How do you build a convincing message? And it's all wrapped up in a story of a pig and a spider. And I do think when you look back on the long arc of history in this world, you see that storytelling and narration is incredibly powerful in sharing essential lessons that, you know, hopefully drive us all in a good direction. So that's what I would recommend.
That is not the answer I was expecting. So I love that when it's non-traditional. Can we also ask the best advice that you've received from someone else that has impacted your leadership style?
Sure. You know, part of it I've already shared, right? But I will say I had a mentor once who said to me, you know, don't become the person that they say you are. And I think as a leader, that's important advice. It's important advice when people are saying negative things about you, right? That don't lean into that. Don't, you know, sort of adopt that attitude. Well, if you're going to say that, this is how I'm going to behave, right? Don't be that person. Be who you are. But I think it's equally important when people are giving you too much positive information, right? It's sort of a version of don't believe the hype, right? Don't believe your own hype. Remember that you're human, that you're flawed, that, you know, you're not a perfect leader, and that everything that comes out of your mouth isn't golden. And I do think sometimes you, especially as you rise in leadership, you're surrounded by a lot of folks who say yes to everything you say. You really need to surround yourself with some people who say no to the things you say as well. So just, you know, try to keep yourself centered and be the person that you actually are, no matter what's blowing you this way or that way, you know, and that's going to be a really good place for you to be.
That's a perfect way, I think, to end today's show. That is great advice. So thank you so much for taking the time to share with us on this Monday morning some hopeful perspective and how to think about the work. And I think you also make it a great case for community colleges. So it's been wonderful to have you on. And Doug, I hope you have a nice upcoming holiday week. And everyone at home, please stay safe.